Relax, I'm not going to give the talk. Jim is going to do that, so. It occurred to me while writing this poem that I can't recall ever having my father giving me a hug or even shaking my hand. And so this is the poem that I wrote. I only knew my father from the eyes of my childhood. I left home when I was 16, returning occasionally for a brief visit. My memories of him were not pleasant. Those were harsh days during the Depression. No time for affection or compliments. No time for I love you. 9 of us in a one-room log cabin, dirt floor, no electricity, no indoor plumbing. As I grew older and began to mentally revisit my childhood days, my admiration for my father increased immeasurably. How in the world had he managed to build this log cabin, frame the windows and doors, put on the roof by himself, to feed and clothe all 9 of us? Here I am, 88 years old. If I could see him now, one more time, I would like to talk to him and tell him that I understand a bit more and share my appreciation of what he was going through and what he had accomplished. We wouldn't hug, but I would shake his hand and say, I love you. I love you, Dad.
Okay. Thanks, Don. So, on Father's Day 2 years ago, we're packing up to leave this sanctuary and to take the essentials with us and to move to Agudas Israel congregation. Did you think back, that's where we were last Father's Day or not? We had a Father's Day sort of in there, but we weren't. We had come back here already, but just barely. Just barely gotten back. And what did we do before we left? We packed our worship basket. That's what we spent the service doing. And I talked about my dad's wooden tackle box and replenishing its contents for summer vacation as a way to connect packing up back to Father's Day. What we did was we made sure we carried who we were with us. So it was portable. It went with us wherever we went. Do you remember what we packed? Remember? What did we pack in the worship basket? Those of you who unpacked it every day at Agudas Israel should remember. Well, stones, somebody says the stones. The chalice, somebody says the chalice. What's that? Somebody said the snuffer. That's true. We did. But what we did was we sort of pared down. We have all these things we want, and we built and we created, but we pared down to that basket of essentials to take with us for worship. And what does worship, the word worship, comes from? It's the old English word worth skype, W-E-O-R-T-H, meaning to shape worth. I like that. It speaks to how important what we do is by coming together every week for worship. We shape worth. And in that moment, we were looking at what was of worth that we needed to take with us, to add to the community of worth. And I said, let's start with the bell. Many of you think the chalice first, I guess. Let's start with the bell. And you think that I ring the bell at the first of the service, that I just strike it, a lot of you think, to get your attention, that I get everyone to stop talking. It does work that way, but that's not why I ring it. When I invite the bell to sound, its sound resonates in the room. It shapes a space of mindfulness. It helps establish sanctuary in the onrush of our busy lives. It's very different to think of it as shaping worth for worship. And I put it in the basket. The next thing was the chalice, the hearth around which we gather, our compass which orients us, a symbol of our message and our tradition, the spirit of our action and mission. We also took, being practical, a box of matches to keep the spark alive. And then the other thing is, and none of you named it, we took our hymnals. It was a big deal to pack up our hymnals. And I know that when you fumble with them in the beginning or the service, some of you grumble, we should only use one book. I don't like messing with two books. Let's don't go back and forth between those books. None of you say, boy, I wish we had a video system and I'm going to pony up for it. But I digress. But what you've heard this morning, our hymnals are our Unitarian Universalist song. They're our song in our songs, our voice and music, our liturgy, as liturgy means the work and words of the people. They are our books of connection to the wider movement of Unitarian Universalism everywhere, of Unitarian Universalist everywhere to the larger community. They are something worthy to aspire to look up from. And we took our stones of community, our joys, our concerns, our prayers, our hopes, ongoing, ever-changing. The other things we thought of were sanctuary, support, community, the contributions of all ages. And then we arrived, and we unpacked it, and we made Agudas Israel, a Jewish synagogue, our home. For that hour, for that time, by creating the space, lighting our hearth, singing our songs, sharing our stories, and creating, noticing, and shaping that which is worthy together. It was very basic, very simple, and very, very good. The way I connected it to my dad's tackle box is going back to a wooden box that my dad had that worked much like modern tackle boxes, only less efficiently. It was didn't fold out, it was wooden, you took trays out, but I loved it. And I said my dad made it in the years before I was born, so I associated it with him and fishing for as long as I could remember. It had history and functional beauty and meaning. It really had tradition in a way. I remember how it felt. I remember the sound of the wood. I remember the rattle of the metal hooks on the plugs that they made when I put the top tray back in. To this day, I can recall a sense of its smell. I can't quite tell you what it is, but I know it inside. Eventually, Dad got each of us three boys our own tackle boxes, modern plastic ones, so we could be responsible for our own gear, you know, responsible for our own world. And so he stood at least a slightly better chance of finding what he needed for himself when he went to find what he remembered being in the box the last time he looked. It didn't help him much. His was the box that usually had what we needed And besides, the gear just seemed a little better if it came out of his tackle box. I'm also reminded as I say this, and I didn't realize this until Don read his piece. You're hearing the world as different post-World War II and Depression world and the experience. I'm talking about leisure time in that space. We lived near a lake, fresh water. We got ready for saltwater fishing in the summer for a month of vacation to go away. And Dad got all the stuff together that we needed for this central focus of our time away. My dad made sure we had what we needed in order to be able to do what we wanted to do. And it could be my dad made sure we had what we needed in order to be able to be or to do or to have a roof over our head. Parenthetically, the way we look at it, dads often seem more concerned that we are doing what they think we need to do rather than what we want to do. And then we get upset that there is a disconnect. But on Father's Day, we remember how our fathers helped us stock our personal tackle boxes. We celebrate what they did for us, how they made the effort. And just as on Mother's Day, we remember that because each father is a human being, each father is imperfect as a father. That is not an excuse or a rationalization. It is a statement of biological being. And when we share our Hallmark memories, as we share our stories of love and caring, many of us also live with stories of neglect, perhaps a few even with stories of abuse. Along with the stories of our fathers being there for us, there are stories of when they miss the mark or when they never even try. There are stories of right and stories of wrong, stories of presence and stories of abandonment, painful estrangement and wonderful togetherness. On Father's Day, we celebrate the love and caring and commitment of fathers, even as we acknowledge the complexities of emotion and experience that may be around that celebration too. So back to my own father. And as Don said, and it gets to you to say it, and that's what's really nice. He was really good to me, especially as a child and in the time I was at home. I enjoyed being with him. He didn't like to sit down and talk about things. He even at one point said to me, in later years, I said, Dad, I have an issue I'd like to talk to you about. He said, you always have issues you want to talk about. We never talked about that issue. But we talked about what we needed to talk about as we did stuff together. That's how it worked. And for me to frame it another way never worked. My father was a strong influence on who I have become, even as I am so different from him. In many ways, I am who I am because of who and how my father was and was then with me. So, like it or not, Father's Day, as we put it out there, is also a day to reflect on ourselves and who we have become as we celebrate our fathers. This appreciation of my father came back to me 2 weeks ago in response to a question that was asked in our soul food group. And for those of you who don't know what soul food is, it's a group of about, it varies from 6 to 12 young adults who are juniors, range from being a junior in high school to about 30 years old. And we meet once a week. And we gather together for dinner, some potluck that we bring, and then we sit around and later and discuss a prompt. And a prompt is a question around life that we discuss. I didn't choose to meet once a week. They chose to meet once a week and want to do that through the summer. It kind of like this sets the week up for them. Some of the prompts are questions of life and belonging. It's that age too, you know? Present, being present, not always moving toward the future. What does it mean to always be focused on the future? We also had a prompt of the possibility of no future, global warming, things like that, and how to deal with it. How does that affect your life? Then we dealt with addictions. One of them was our prompt was, what addictions do you have? How have you tried to break them? What is your sense of failure, of success? What role do they play? Let's just talk about those addictions. That actually moved us into a next prompt of family issues. What about, you know, fathers, mothers, the relationship with them? The other thing was an interesting piece of they brought up called time destroyers. What are the things we do that take away our time but that you can't really put together a sense of benefit from? You feel like you're wasting your time, time destroyers. One was being selfish and having your own voice. How can you speak up for yourself and not be viewed as selfish? And yet, how do you own what's going on? Then one prompt was famous people that were saying things they wished they knew when they were younger. And one of them was the man who started Craigslist. And he said he wished he'd been conscious of branding earlier in life. And that moved us into whether branding was a good way to think about yourself, and then questions of image, and then the substance. What we keep coming back to in all of those things is, one is the not having to live being vulnerable to other people's drama. That was the sense of what was going on with many of us, is being concerned about that. And that we don't have to live being so vulnerable to other people's drama. And inside that was the importance of loving yourself. Imagine, live as if you like yourself, and it just might happen. The importance of loving yourself, your own Jim-ness, or Susan-ness, or Don-ness, you know, and having that be enough. And then the question came, after all that buildup, but that's because it's central. The question was, how do we do that? How does one love oneself? How do you look less outside yourself? And then, framing that, how do you carry who you are with you as your tackle box, your worship basket, your sense of dad in Don's case? It's different for each of us. But I realized in that moment that part of it for me came from my dad. It came from just being around him. I had the experience of knowing that I was okay. It wasn't said, I just knew. My body, my cells were home. They had a home with him and from him. Later on, when developmentally I needed him to tell me different things and reassure me, it didn't work so well. And we struggled like that for that time. But I spent time with my dad. He would come by and pick me up after school, and I'd ride around in my Jeep with him, as I said before, until he finished work in the orange groves and took me home. So then we'd get home in time for supper. But I was around him. Or on the weekends, we would just go and work in the yard or in the groves, work together, or be on the lake together, or do things together. I was just around him. Famous child psychologist Erik Erikson, in The Eight Ages of Man, it's in a book called Childhood and Society. And he published it first in 1950, so it's very sexist, The Eight Ages of Man. But he writes about children experiencing from their parents, and this was a phrase that came back to me, a deep and almost somatic conviction that there is meaning. There is a meaning to what they are doing. That's the phrase. A deep, almost somatic, somatic means in the body, in the cells, conviction of okay as a basic sense. And for that, I say, thanks, Dad. In the Eight Ages of Man, Erickson has these, he calls them nuclear conflicts that we have during the course of our lives. And the first one is basic trust versus basic mistrust. It moves on to autonomy versus shame and doubt. These are the questions we were dealing with in the prompts in the soul food classes, once you start thinking about it. Industry versus inferiority, identity versus role confusion, intimacy versus isolation, generativity versus stagnation, ego integrity versus despair. The firm establishment of enduring patterns for the solution of the nuclear conflict of basic trust versus basic mistrust in mere existence. What a great phrase. Basic trust versus basic mistrust in mere existence is the first task of the ego. He goes on to talk about the maternal relationship, and it forms the basis in the child for a sense of identity which will later combine a sense of being all right, of being oneself, and of becoming what other people trust one will become. He says, there are therefore, within certain limits previously defined as the musts of childcare, few frustrations in either this or the following stages which the growing child cannot endure if the frustration leads to the ever-renewed experience of greater sameness and stronger continuity of development toward a final integration of the individual life cycle with some meaningful, wider belongingness. Meaningful, wider belongingness. Parents must not only have certain ways of guiding by prohibition and permission, they must also be able to represent to the child a deep and almost somatic conviction that there is a meaning to what they are doing. Later on in the book, he says, children will not fear life whose parents have had the integrity not to fear death. Interesting. So that was, my mom gave it to me, but my dad also spent time with me. And the interesting thing, so I get this deep somatic conviction of I'm good to go. It's in me. I'm good. The details are layers. I lose it, it comes back and forth, but I can always go back to touch it. But this is the next paragraph. How does he do this? He says, but even under the most favorable circumstances, this stage seems to introduce into psychic life and become prototypical for a sense of, here we go, inner division and universal nostalgia for a paradise forfeited. It is against this powerful combination of a sense of having been deprived, of having been divided, and of having been abandoned that basic trust must maintain itself throughout life. Powerful combination of a sense of having been deprived, having been divided, having been abandoned. That's where basic trust must maintain itself throughout life. That's the paragraph I struggled with. My dad wasn't able to help me with that as I got older. Once I left home, once he left home, we didn't do that well. We didn't have that time together or the words to bridge the difference. But still, there's the wooden tackle box. There's the worship basket that I get to take with me. And then on the same page, I'm not going to read it, but Erickson says, that's where religion comes in. The next paragraph. Addressing basic trust, sense of having been deprived, having been divided, having been abandoned. Trust must become, individual trust must become a common faith. I would say that our universalist tradition, a loving God, an inclusive universe, a meaningful, wider belongingness is right there. The sense of being right and good to go. My father, any inclination to the truths of progressive religious tradition seemed to go back to my experience of growing up. It had its beginnings in my dad's tackle box, or rather being with him. a deep somatic conviction of deeper meaning and wider connection. And for that, I say, thanks, Dad. I've tried to live as if I like myself. And that's how I try to make it happen. And it's from your example of being with me. So I say, thank you.